Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to a special edition of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I know, it's not Saturday, it's Sunday, but yesterday we had some technical difficulties, so I really wanted to try to get this show in with my special guest. This month is Yoga Awareness Month, and I want to let you know that you can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Excuse me, just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Also, send me an email. I would love to hear from you. My email address is SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@Hotmail.com. Thank you, because we are close to 300,000 downloads of the podcast. Wow, like my mind just can't even wrap around that. So thank you for listening and sharing. I hope the shows have been helpful to you. I hope today's show will be helpful. Well, I have a wonderful guest on today, and she's a beautiful young lady who I knew a long time ago. Actually, she helped me with my daughter. That's a little bit of our history, but right now she is, like, mad flexible. Like, I don't know if you've seen the pictures on the Facebook fan page. She can, like, touch her toe backwards on her head and lift her leg up over her head. She can do all kinds of things, but she originally started out in dance. She has a bachelor's degree in dance. Now, this morning we're going to be speaking with Misia Denea. Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes, thank you so much. Sometimes people struggle with it, but you got it. You nailed it.
Wonderful. So now, you started out in dance. So how did you get from dance to yoga?
Well, the thing about dance that I like is it's a real connection to your body and breathing, and that's what yoga is essentially. So in some shape or form with most dance classes, when you're doing beginning stretches before you do a routine or you do certain exercises, there's stretching going on. So in a way, that was my small introduction to yoga. But there was a woman when I was a student at Temple University in dance, there was a woman named Vicki Rothstein. I'll never forget her. She was a beautiful dancer and choreographer, and she was in the Masters in Fine Arts Dance program, and it was her job to reach out to the undergraduate dance students and teach yoga sessions. So one day she came to a dance class for the undergraduates, and she introduced us to sun salutations, or they're called Surya Namaskar in Sanskrit. And it just, I mean, some of the undergraduates were, like, giggling, like they weren't used to, like, you know, stretching like that and meditating and quieting the mind in that way. But it just, it blew me away the way she was instructing us to move with the breath and how to, like, you know, let go of any tension in our shoulders. I mean, you know, dance is very much a stress reliever for me and an emotional release, but yoga, like, completely offered something else that I hadn't experienced in dance. And so she continued to teach yoga there, and then after I was finished with Temple, when I was living in West Philly, there was a yoga studio that opened up like walking distance from my house, and they had morning yoga classes for $5. And for somebody who's who's an artist, I was living as an artist in Philly for a very long time, and that was just so appealing. And what I would also like to say is that the word yoga means union, and unfortunately, what I'm seeing now across the United States is that, you know, yoga isn't accessible for people who don't have the time or the resources to go. So I'm really in awe of yoga studios or yoga teachers who are offering yoga for free or donation. And, you know, I'll talk about ways I'll be offering yoga to people who may not have access to it later in the show. But I think that's really profound. I mean, I live in California now. I was living in Philly for 2 years.
Yeah, you were living
for
on
3 years.
The East Coast. And now you moved to the West Coast. You left us. What's going on?
I know. I'm still there in spirit. Yeah, my family, like my mom lives in D.C. and all my, you know, close friends live in Philadelphia still. So, like, I'll still be on the East Coast.
Misia, let me just ask you, though. Okay, first of all, a lot of people have a misconceptions about yoga and what it is. Now, is yoga a religion? I mean, can someone, like, does this, like, if you start practicing yoga, are you not a Christian? That little misbelief there.
Well, I'm glad you said that, too, because I've understood that there's some churches now that offer yoga and things like that, and I don't want people to believe, because there's so many different types of yoga now. There's, like, dozens upon dozens of different styles of yoga throughout the U.S. and the world now. But, I mean, if your preference is to chant or go to kirtans, there's that element of yoga where you're igniting your throat chakra and you're singing a lot. And there's, you know, meditation classes, and it just all depends. Like, if you want something that's more meditative, maybe you'll go to a Jiva Mukti style yoga class. But if you want just a pure yoga class for the exercise, some people just go to power yoga. And I taught at a power yoga studio for 2.5 years in Washington, D.C., and it was even the owner of the studio emphasized that there's, you know, you shouldn't om for a long time. There shouldn't be a long meditative shavasana, which is the ending kind of meditative practice. That should only be 1 or 2 minutes. And I like to have people in my vinyasa classes in shavasana for about 5 to 7 minutes. So the good thing about yoga now is that since it has so much exposure now...
So you're not really, it's not something that you have to feel like I'm going against my religion if I start practicing yoga.
No, not at all. And there's a niche for people now. There's so many different styles of yoga offered these days that you can, you know, pick and choose which feels best for you. If you don't want something where there's a lot of chanting or meditating, you don't have to do that. But if you want like a pure physical experience, you can find a style or a teacher that teaches something like that.
So now, young people can do, little kids can even do yoga, and older people can do yoga. So what are the benefits? What are the benefits of yoga? Why should someone try to get into yoga? And what's like the beginning level style that someone should get into, you know?
I would suggest that for anybody, since if you're living in an urban setting, there's yoga studios like bursting up everywhere. So more often than not, yoga studios have an introduction to yoga or a yoga fundamentals class, or they might even have a series for beginners. So, you know, Google your town and look up the yoga places in your area and look at their schedule online and see if they have a yoga series for beginners or if they have a class for beginners, because that space will make it accessible and easy for you to feel comfortable, because the teacher is going to teach the class in a way that's comfortable, at a comfortable pace for people who are new to yoga.
Now, I know there's like different types, like you were saying, there's some that are like chanting and meditative. I mean, and there's like the hot yoga. What's the benefit of the hot yoga? What is that deal? Like, it's super hot in there. Like, how hot is the room?
Yeah, I've only actually been to a Bikram yoga or a hot yoga class once or twice, and I think it's above 90 degrees. So if you have any health conditions where you're not supposed to be immersed in hot climates, I wouldn't suggest you do it. But a lot of people who are brand new to yoga actually really enjoy hot yoga and Bikram yoga because they're sweating a lot, so they're purifying their body and they're detoxing their body. When you're sweating like that, your muscles are more... You know, you're lubricating your joints and your muscles because it's so hot. So if you're new to yoga, you'll be surprised how limber you can become so fast. You have to drink a lot of water before you go to those classes. You can't eat before those. You're not really supposed to eat before a yoga class, maybe like an hour or two. But in the hot yoga classes, you really have to have an empty stomach or you get sick.
You got certified to be a yoga. What did you have to go through to do that? Did you have to go to like a special retreat or... a special school? How did that happen?
Yeah, there are people that do go to retreats. Like, there's certain people that go to the Bahamas or India and they'll do an intensive and, you know, Mexico or something like that for a month, and then they'll be registered to teach for a 200-hour certification, which is usually the beginning certification obligation that you have to teach. Since I was living in Philadelphia at the time that I took my teacher training, I went to Dhyana Yoga, which I love, which has several locations now. They're in Old City, they're in New Jersey, I believe they have one in West Philly, and a few other places. DhyanaYoga.com, Dhyana-Yoga.com. And after 2006, after I had explored taking classes on my own, I was like, I really would love to be an instructor. So I looked around a little bit. I happened to be on Dhyana's email list because I think I went to a class of hers like in 2003, and I was still on her newsletter listserv. And lo and behold, one day I had an email that said, our teacher training is starting, and I just kind of seized the opportunity, and it really changed my life. Yoga changed my life. I mean, a lot of people are interested in the physical benefits of it, which are phenomenal. But yoga offered me a mental clarity and grounding that I didn't have before. My life, though, it was a huge pivotal point in my life to really embrace the teachings of yoga and, you know, offer it to other people. Because even
so
as a teacher...
But were you nervous, though? Were you nervous, like, going in front of a class and having to teach? Or had you taught dance before, so it wasn't like a...
Yeah.
...in front of people?
Yeah, no, so I had taught dance for a while before I became a yoga teacher, so I was really geared up and ready. And I've always enjoyed public speaking, so, you know, being in a classroom setting, and I love teaching. Like, I really enjoy gathering people together and sharing information. And, you know, you even learn, it's a good exchange because you learn a lot from your students, too. Like, you know, when you have conversations with them after class, or some people have, in my yoga classes, have become my friends, and I still keep in touch with them. And the word yoga actually means union, or to yoke together. So I've really, you know, embraced that philosophy a lot, and not only on my yoga mat, but outside of class.
So what's the most difficult pose that you're able to do, or what do you consider the most difficult pose?
There's arm balances are usually pretty challenging to me, and the ones that I can usually do pretty well are called side crow or crow pose. There's one that I've really kind of nailed down within the last year or so called Ekapada Kundinyasana, which is a mouthful, but you're in an arm balance and your legs are in a split, and I've finessed that yoga pose. It's taken a long time. And I also should note, too, with yoga, like when you first go to your yoga class, you should never expect to do advanced poses right away. Yoga is a practice, and it takes time to, you know, master, you know, breathing techniques and yoga postures, or asanas as they're called, and that's patience that you cultivate with yourself when you develop
a
yoga practice.
So it's something you just don't want to just jump in and try to, like, you know, stretch your head behind your, you know, foot or something weird. How long should you, like, hold? Before we even go there, what are some basic things, like, say, a morning ritual, maybe like four poses that someone could do to, like, start their day? What are, like, four poses they could do?
I would suggest that anyone who's new to yoga, just in the morning or the evening, just do a few sun salutations on your own. And sun salutations have different variations depending on what yoga school or yoga studio that you go to. But the most basic moves are, the sun salutation, I would recommend Balasana or Child's Pose, which is a very restorative pose where you're on your hands and your knees. And there's a lot of different ways you can do this pose, but most often the way people practice this pose is their big toes are touching on the mat, their shins are facing the floor, knees are about hip distance or mat distance apart, your hips are over your heels, and your hands extend forward, and your heart's reaching down to the mat, and your head's relaxing, or you can have your one of your ears down to the mat. But it's such a restorative pose. It realigns your spine, it opens your hips, it creates circulation in your legs. It's a real restorative pose that you can, and even in yoga classes, if you're in a yoga class and the pace is fast for you, you can always go into Child's Pose.
And so what are three others that people could do? So you have Child's Pose, and then...
Downward Facing Dog, which is a pose that you'll often visit a lot in a vinyasa class or yoga flow class. And Downward Facing Dog is really good for people who are commuters and they have to commute a lot for work, or if they have a very sedentary working lifestyle, because that pose also realigns your spine, and it's an inversion. So your head is... An inversion is when your head is below your heart. So your head's dangling in this pose. Your hands and your feet are supporting you, so you're strengthening your legs and your arms, and you're relieving any tension in your hips. You're stretching out your hamstrings, which is great since you've been sitting all day, and you're stretching your Achilles and your calves, and you're sending all this energy to your hands, which is good. If if you're on your BlackBerry or iPhone a lot, it helps with the carpal tunnel. Like, I mean, it's such a simple pose that offers so many benefits, and it's stress relieving too because your head's below your heart, and it's a
what
good
about
way.
What about two other ones that would be helpful? So we have Child's Pose and Downward Facing Dog, and
I would say Mountain Pose, which is also part of the sun salutation too. A Mountain Pose is just standing up But in mountain pose or Tadasana, it's also called, you have to really engage your core, and you have to find the length of your spine when you're in mountain pose. You have to understand that your core is supporting your spine. You really have to connect to the earth with your feet and spread your toes a lot and reach your heels down. And you have to lift your heart, not to the point where you're jutting out your ribs, but you can feel your collarbones open and you can feel the top of your head reaching up towards the sky. And mountain pose is actually a good way to connect with how to do your handstands or your headstands, because basically standing up is the same thing as being upside down, so it's a really good way to find alignment.
Oh, that's easy for you to say, because you can do that.
No.
I don't think I can be upside down.
you can use the wall, too, for those beginning headstands and headstands.
Yeah.
But mountain pose, people are like, oh, my God, mountain pose, no big deal. But you really have to take your attention inward to understand how you're supporting your body when you're standing up, because it'll make it easier for you to be upside down when you know how to properly align your bones when you're standing up.
Wow. And one more pose that will be helpful in the morning.
I think the chair pose, or it's called Utkatasana, or it looks like you're hovering over a public restroom that I joke a lot in my class. But what you do is you imagine there's an imaginary chair behind your tush, and you take an imaginary seat, and your knees and your thighs are reaching together, and it sends a lot of fresh blood to your quads, and you kind of fire up your legs in this pose and create a lot of heat in your legs and power in your legs, and your arms are extending up and your heart is lifting, and you're engaging your core so you don't crunch in your back. So those four poses are really good to start out with.
Wow, so we got child's pose, downward facing dog, mountain pose, and then
chair pose.
Okay, it's just called chair pose. So those are four things that people could do in the morning. Now, what about in the evening? What would be different if you were trying to do some things in the evening to help you de-stress maybe? Or would you do the same type of thing?
Well, not necessarily, because your evening practice should be preparing your body to go to sleep. So sun salutations or Surya Namaskar you do in the morning. So in some evening yoga classes, people do sun salutations, but, you know, you're not supposed to do a lot of heart openers, because heart openers or bending backwards can, send an adrenaline rush to you, since you're opening the heart and sending fresh blood to your heart and awakening yourself. And it doesn't jolt the nervous system, but, you know, you should avoid those poses in the night. So actually the word hatha yoga, hatha means sun and moon. So in my hatha yoga classes that I used to teach in D.C., we used to do moon salutations. So in sun salutations, you do a lot of standing lunges, and then in the moon salutation, you do anjaneyasana or low lunges to help you get into, quieting your mind and not doing a vigorous sun salutation. So instead of going from down dog to plank pose and then lifting your leg and going into like warrior one, you would just go from down dog or tabletop.
Okay, Misa, you kind of lost me a little bit.
Sorry. I feel like I'm in a class. I'm in autopilot. But, you know, you could do low lunges instead of standing lunges, and it's a good way to kind of slow down your thoughts and do a meditative.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what
now,
I would
you
say.
Were recently doing some teleconferencing, I believe. Talk to me about that and what are you doing with the teleconference?
Yeah, I'm also a yoga instructor and I'm a health coach. I graduated from the Institute of Integrative Nutrition in 2010, which was in New York, but they have online classes now. And I really enjoy teaching people how to incorporate health into their lives, especially people who do yoga. So the term that I've coined for my business is Hatha Holistics Integrative Wellness. And I love nature and I love the seasons. And the seasons change and so do we. So as the seasons are changing, there's activities and ways that we relate to food that should change so that we can make sure that our immune system will follow suit. So I'm in the middle of leading a cleanse, a fall into balance cleanse, I'm calling it, where it's all online and I offer you recipes and meditations. And I interviewed an herbalist who's a good friend of mine that lives in New York who has, years of experience, and you'll learn about
certain herbs. So where can they go? Where can someone go to learn about the teleconference? What's your website, or is there a phone number? How would they learn about registering?
you can sign up via Eventbrite, www.eventbrite.fallintobalance, and the number 2, all one word, .com. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. It's www.fallintobalance, the number 2, .eventbrite.com, and then you'll see, once you get to that link, you'll see how to sign up and everything like that. And I also have decided that anyone that's listening into this show will get a discount, and if you mention Saturday with Joy Keys when you register, then I'll give you
$10. Ooh, very nice, yeah. Very nice. So everybody, you want to fall into balance, and you can get some wonderful information. So you got this raw food from the raw foods. Now, do you only do raw foods yourself, or do you have like a restrictive diet because you're doing yoga, or no?
No, and that's what I was talking about with, that's the beautiful thing about eating seasonally. In D.C., and also, you know, from living in Philadelphia, it's pretty humid and hot in the summertime, and eating cooked food is really not ideal for your body. It kind of overheats your body, and it cools your body off to eat, you know, raw foods like cucumbers or gazpacho, or eating smoothies or, you know, fresh juice in the morning. That benefits your body in a lot of ways, and you know, I just, like, in the summertime, like, I feel kind of lethargic and heavy if I'm eating a lot of cooked food or a lot of prepared food or processed food. So the Raw Food Institute, I also graduated from there in the spring, and that's located in Washington, D.C., and you do a week-long detox as part of your learning. So you did a shot of wheatgrass in the morning, and you're doing enemas, which is funny for people,
wow.
But you're purging your body of anything that's
And how long
keeping,
is that?
You're stagnant.
For a week? Is that for a week?
It's a week long commitment, and they have a Facebook page. Just look them up, Raw Food Institute. And if you're not in the school's moving to Connecticut, but if you're not in D.C. or Connecticut, then there's an online program that you can do to learn how to prepare raw food and things of that nature. So in the summertime, I led a webinar called Raw Food 101, because some people are like, oh, so does that mean you're eating raw meat and raw fish? And some people actually do that. Some people include raw eggs into their smoothies and things like that.
Oh, I can't do the raw eggs.
Yeah, the route.
I don't know.
Yes, smoothies I love. The route I went was just raw vegan mostly. And what I was doing was like a 70-30. So that can mean maybe you're doing juice and a smoothie in the morning, and then a salad for dinner, and maybe you'll have some, like, you know, hummus and pita bread for night. So it's not, I know some people, I've read about people who are exclusively 100%, you know, raw vegan, which is something I can't
right.
commit to, because I live an active life, and I don't think I've tried that, and it depleted me, actually.
Yeah.
So everybody's different, everyone's body's different, so you find where it works best for you to include raw foods into your life. But,
well,
you know,
let me just ask you, because we're running out of time a little bit, what type of equipment
sure.
does somebody need to start, like, a yoga, say I want to go start yoga, and in the back, and there's, like, a rope, and, I mean, what things would I need to get started if I just wanted to start something on my own?
Well, I would suggest you get a yoga mat, which are easy to get now. You can go to like a Marshalls or a TJ Maxx, and I know in Philadelphia they have Five and Below, and they have yoga mats for $5. And
mm-hmm.
yoga mats are like cars. You can get a lemon or you can get an SUV. And so there's $5 yoga mats. If you want a yoga mat that's green and is made from recycled rubber or something like that, those cost a little bit more money, but they're really high quality. They have a lot of grip, so you don't slip on them when you get sweaty. You know, there's Manduka mats or Jade mats or Gaia mats that cost about like $70, but they'll last you years, you know, instead of like a $5
wow.
mat might last. If you're using it a lot, it might last you maybe like a few months or a year. But
now,
it's
what about
investment.
The block? I've seen a block. Sometimes people have a block maybe because they
yeah.
can't reach. Is that
the floor.
Helpful to get the block?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and you can get those. I've seen those in Five and Below, too, and the yoga straps, too, and those, if it's hard for you to reach the floor or if you can't touch your hands to your feet, you use those props to help you stretch.
Now, do you think that you were talking, we talked earlier about going into prisons
mm-hmm.
with yoga. Do you think that's going to be helpful or nervous? Has that been done before, taking yoga into prisons?
Yeah, there's a group of people who've already done this activity, and I've been inspired by them. There's a group of people that go into prisons or, you know, to places where people are incarcerated, and they lead meditation classes and yoga. And a lot of people, some people are really excited for me, but some people are like, well, why in the world would you go to prisons? Because it helps, you know, oftentimes when, well, I'll first say I'm in California now, and California has a huge overpopulation crisis with the prisons. So that means if, you know, people are, you know, stacked in jails, you know, fights are more likely to happen, inmates are more likely to be violent, and if they have a yoga practice or a meditation practice, that reduces that significantly. And it's been proven, studies have shown that yoga in jails reduces recidivism or inmates returning to jail over and over again. So it's kind
well,
of
you know,
this
I
revolutionary
had
approach.
On, yeah, mm-hmm. I had a woman on who did, it's called the Dhamma Brothers Project, and they were doing, what is that, Vipassana yoga in the prisons, and it really helped. I mean, they were doing, like, with people who were in there for life and, you know, we consider like, hard criminals, you know, murderers and things of that nature. But the documentary was beautiful, and so I can imagine that yoga would have a similar effect on, like you said, the violence and just being able to quiet your mind. So, I mean, if you're in a situation where you're crowded in a small cell and, you know, people are always watching you and you're always being tested, you need something to, like, bring yourself back to center. So the mm-hmm. yoga, I think I agree with you that it's going to be helpful. I mean, and it's wonderful that you're doing that because, I mean, I think sometimes our society is just so mean and crude that mm-hmm. Once somebody does something, they're just written off. And,
right.
For example, you know, and then they're, like, we don't really think about restorative issues when people are in prison. We just, like, forget about them. But
I think
that there's still a human there and that maybe they can be reached. And even though they're in prison, I mean, you got to make the best of wherever you are. Sometimes
it's
we're in prison
true.
And we're not even in prison. You know, you can be in prison outside. Like, I'm free.
Hello.
I can be in prison in my mind, in my body, and my limitations that I put on myself. So you don't necessarily need four walls and guards to be in a prison. So
exactly.
You know, just I thought that was something I needed to say.
Yeah, no, and my initiative is called Yoga from the Inside. And, you know, a lot of people who refer to people in jail will say, oh, so-and-so's on the inside. So I coined the term Yoga from the Inside. And there's a Facebook page where you can learn and keep up to date with things that I'm doing and donate towards that.
It's called Yoga
Facebook,
from the Inside?
Facebook.com/YogaFromTheInside. Facebook.com/YogaFromTheInside. And you can learn more about what I'm doing here in California with that.
And tell us the address for the Eventbrite, the teleconference. Tell the address again.
Sure. It's www.fallintobalance2eventbrite.com. And if you have any questions about it, when you go to the website, you can call me. I don't mind getting a phone call, 267-456-5155, or email me, misiadenea@gmail.com, all one word, misiadenea@gmail.com.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, I really wish you much success with the teleconferences. When is the next one coming, or is it just like an ongoing, rolling type of thing? Or
ongoing thing. Like, I really have I love teaching classes and going to studios or, you know, having private clients, but I really enjoy how the Internet has made it easy to really reach out to people. So there are people I've never met who've taken my class and really enjoy my classes and become my clients. So I'm really enjoying all the different things that you can do with teleconferences and webinars and things of that nature.
Oh, no. Well, you know, I totally agree with you. The podcast, like I said, we're close to 300,000 downloads, which is amazing. And you
mm-hmm.
really, I think it's a uniting, I mean, in a sense, it's yoga. The Internet
mm-hmm.
being yoga, in a way, uniting people for a similar cause that you may never have met because of physical, you know, boundaries. But the electronic age has really brought us closer, I feel. So thank you so much, Misia, for coming on
thank
today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Have a wonderful Saturday, okay?
You too. Take care.
Bye. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I just got off the phone with yoga instructor Misia Denea, and she's doing some teleconferences so that you can learn about healthy eating and incorporating into your life. And also she's doing yoga from the inside, trying to develop a yoga program for people who are in prison to, you know, try to bring a little peace in their lives. So if you want to support the Yoga from the Inside, you can go to her Facebook page, Yoga from the Inside, teleconferences. are on Eventbrite, and you can check those out. And also, she gave her phone number and her email that you can reach out to her. So she's very open. So if you're interested in bringing yoga into your life, give her a call, contact her, check her out. She's in California, so with the telephone, you can talk to her no matter where you are. I hope you guys have a wonderful Saturday and a great week. Coming up next Saturday, I'll be talking about Cesar and the farm workers. That's next Saturday, September 27th, 1 a.m. Eastern, so you can call in for the live show. Also, I want to let you know that you can download free archives of the podcast on iTunes. I'm not sure if you know that. You can download the archives. So if you've missed a show or you want to share something with somebody, not only can they go look them up on Blog Talk Radio, but they can download them. Have a wonderful week. Thank you so much.